Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, episode 36, Boston is Free. So when we were last in Boston, the city was under siege and General Washington had arrived to become the new commander-in-chief. By the new year of 1776, the siege had been on for 6 months, with both sides kind of just staring at each other. But there was something different on the morning of January 1st. A flag rose above the American lines. The flag was commissioned by Washington. It had 13 alternating red and white stripes, and in the upper left-hand corner was the Union Jack. Now, for those who are saying, whoa, 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 come on, man. The Union Jack? What about the circle of white stars? Well, I'll tell you that the Betsy Ross flag, as we know it, had 13 alternating stripes. In the upper left-hand corner had a field of blue with a circle of 13 stars. And that flag was commissioned by Benjamin Franklin in 1781, towards the end of the war. But in the early days of the war, flags were almost up for interpretation. Each army and each unit had their own flag that they were presenting. And for Washington, this was his interpretation. The United Colonies, British subjects, but 13 soon-to-be free colonies. And you're going to see different patterns, and so sometime in the future, I'm sure I'll do a flag episode. Fun with Flags with Dr. Sheldon Cooper. No, I'm just kidding. The common theme for the most part was this 13 alternating red and white stripes, but for the most part, they were up for interpretation by each individual army, unit, company, whatever. It's not until 1781 that we adopt the Betsy Ross flag. The funniest part is that I'm watching The Patriot, and everyone knows the Mel Gibson movie. Makes you laugh is when they show the Americans, or when they capture Charleston, they're waving that flag a full 2-3 years before that flag was even created. So, I digress on the flag talk, though. I'm sorry. So, to do a quick tale of the tape, April 19th, 1775, Lexington and Concord. A bloody retreat forces the British back into Boston City. Siege lines are erected around the outer portion of the city on the high ground on the mainland, where Boston Port is almost on like a peninsula with a narrow neck. The high ground around the port city is covered by the militia. The siege line is 16 miles long. It kept the British in the city, but it didn't drive the British away. The British fleet was still operating around the port city, and though they were protected from the Navy couldn't drive off the Patriots because the Patriots were on the high ground and the Navy guns couldn't elevate high enough to lay any kind of consistent cannon fire on the position. So for the most part, it becomes a real long waiting game. But by December 1775, Washington is in a real tough spot. The siege has been going on for 6 months, and this is a theme that we've talked about even as far back as when we were talking about the Canada episodes, the campaign in and around Quebec. Enlistments are running out for Washington. If things didn't change, he wouldn't be able to hold the British in the city. He had to figure out a way to drive the Navy off so that he can capture the city, or at the very least, force the British to board their ships and leave the city completely. Enter Henry Knox. Like many of our revolutionary heroes, Knox is born of modest roots. His father, William, was a shipmaster doing a lot of trading with the West Indies. When he dies, Henry will quit school to become the sole supporter of his mother. Now, young Henry was an avid reader. He loved history in particular. So he's right at home working as a clerk in a bookstore. And will open his own store at some point. He was a supporter of the cause from the early days, even joined the colonial militia in 1772. It's actually a funny anecdote, while he's drilling, that he meets a young woman by the name of Lucy Fluker. She was so smitten with the dashing young Knox that she became a regular in his store. Her parents, who were loyalists, we won't hold that against him, felt that Knox would never be able to provide for her. Lucy, no, she didn't care. She knew what she wanted, and she wanted Knox. The couple married in June of 1774. Lucy's parents may have not liked the union, but their marriage lasted. In April 1775, with the outbreak of hostilities, Knox will close up his shop, leave it to the looters, ride for the continental lines, his wife riding just alongside. She even went so far as to sew his sword to the inside of his jacket. And I don't mean like it's kind of like hanging there, just like on the inside. No, she opened up his jacket, two pieces of fabric, and stuck the sword inside and sewed it back up. That's a lot of work. Only thing I can say is this woman's a keeper. When he arrives at the Continental Lines, he offers up his services. Now, Henry, as much as he loved history, found great fascination in artillery. So it's no surprise that he wants to work with the artillery. And when Washington arrives a couple months later, he's so impressed by the young man, he brought him into his inner circle. When you make it into Washington's inner circle, it's like being a made man in the mafia. This man, he was going to be around for a while. So for 6 months, the siege lines held the British in the city, and that's about all they did. To try and assault the city would be too dangerous. Plus, you risk the safety of the citizens that are still in the city. And if you try to run the neck or take boats across, you're exposed to cannon fire from the British fleet. Well, on the flip side, the British, well, they weren't planning to come out either. After Bunker Hill, well, it's obvious they're not leaving anytime soon. Washington needed to find a way to improve the siege itself. So, this is Henry Knox's plan. He says, "General, Ticonderoga, which we captured in May, just so happens to have the right amount of cannon and guns that we need that would serve our purpose." Now, Washington, he's intrigued by the idea. His advisors, on the other hand, think it'll never work. But this is what makes Washington such a great commander. He's not a bullish commander. It's my way or the highway. You do it my way because I'm the smartest man in the room. No, no. The way Washington operates is, I feel like this might be in our interest, but I'm open to hear what you have to say. And that's what I think made Washington a great commander. He was a good field commander. You know, more often than not, he got his butt whooped on the battlefield. And, you know, not to be a spoiler, but yeah, we're going to get into some battles where he really got himself handed a good whooping. But what makes him such a great and beloved general is the fact that he said, "I don't know everything, and I'm willing to trust the men around me, because if I fail, you fail, and if you fail, I fail." That's something that's missed today. It's if you fail, you fail. And if I fail, you still fail. It never falls back on, at least, you know what, this is not a political podcast. Just know that Washington was a great military mind for listening to the men around him. But Henry Knox would not take no for an answer. So on December 1st, Knox, and he did have the permission from Washington, he didn't do this on his own, set out for Fort Ticonderoga. It was going to be a difficult journey. Winter was coming, and he's going to have to find a way to transport all these guns back to Cambridge, Massachusetts, some 400 miles. This was definitely going to be a task that was going to really make the young colonel dig deep. So, December 1st, Knox sets out for Fort Ticonderoga. He arrives 4 days later. The day he arrives, sets the men to work, dismantling the guns. Fort Ticonderoga was holding 43 brass and iron cannon, 6 cohorns, 8 mortars, and 2 howitzers, a grand total of 52 pieces in all. By December 9th, those guns are loaded on bateaux, and they're ready to begin their trip south on Lake George. Now, for the most part, this early part of the winter, the weather had been relatively mild. But, of course, as we see with all the bad luck that the Continentals have at times, Knox's men row straight into a gale. Luckily, though, they make it to the south end of the lake and to Fort George just as the lake began to freeze. But now the next challenge was that he would have to find sleds for the overland portion of the trip. So for a week, Knox sent out men to look around the local area for the necessary sleds and oxen that he would need. For the next week, Knox and his men scour the local areas looking for the necessary sleds. He joyously writes Washington, telling him, "I have acquired 42 strong sleds with 80 yoke of oxen to drag the guns to Springfield, where I shall have fresh cattle to carry them to camp. I hope that in 16 to 17 days to be able to present to your excellency a noble artillery train." Now, Knox was ready to move out on the 17th, exactly 1 week after arriving. But there was a problem. There was not enough snow on the ground. Sleds don't really work all that well if they're not working in snow. So, Knox has to wait. And wait. And after a week, or about, I should say, 8 days, Christmas, he got his wish. A storm comes in. They are able to get the sleds. It's a little bit difficult because actually a lot of snow came in. He needed like a middle amount of snow. I know, it's ridiculous. When it rains, it pours, and when it's a drought, it doesn't rain. Just the bad luck of the Continentals. So a storm comes in, and by January 5th, Knox will arrive in Albany with his artillery train. Now, the next task was going to be to cross the Hudson. Now, he tries to cross the Hudson and finds out the ice is not thick enough. They actually lose one sled to the river. So Knox has to wait again. But after a few cold days, the ice will thicken, and it's strong enough for them to cross on the 8th. All the sleds make it across, and even the one that went into the river, thanks to the people of Albany, they help him get it out, and that sled is underway. Now, once they make it to Massachusetts, the weather finally begins to cooperate. Maybe it's just that New York weather, I don't know. And the roads improve. That's another big thing. The roads were improving. He was going over dirt trails that didn't see heavy wagon loads going through. Now he's on the more, not paved roads, but more traversed roads of Massachusetts. So his road conditions improve along with the weather. So the guns will arrive in camp on January 24th. 1776. Behind schedule, yes, but a welcome sight nonetheless. More importantly, prove those advisors that were telling Washington he'll never do it. So the Continentals set to work placing the guns. For the next month and a half, the Continentals would set guns in various positions along the siege lines. They even went so far as to paint logs, so it looked like they had more guns than they actually did. But the final nail came on March 4th. Under the cover of night, Washington would move cannons onto Dorchester Heights. Now, Dorchester Heights had the closest proximity to the city. It was ideal to stick a bunch of guns up there because it completely threatened the city along with the Navy ships below. How? Wakes up the next morning and is stuck. There is no way he can assault the position with all these fresh artillery that he has. He was probably looking at 75, 80 guns. What he was looking at was 52 guns and a bunch of logs. But we're not going to tell him that. But he's looking at what he thinks is a lot of cannons surrounding him. And Dorchester Heights, the most optimum position to put artillery, is now loaded with artillery. So Howe really has no choice. On March 17th, the British and their Tory allies begin to load the boats. Destination was Nova Scotia. From there, Howe could regroup and plan the next move. If he couldn't take Boston, he was going to take an even bigger port city in the north. But that's something we're going to get to in a few weeks. So that'll do it for this episode. I know we didn't spend a lot of time in Boston, but there's not much going on. And this is actually going to be one of the last times we're in New England for a while, because the next time we come back, we're moving, you know, we're still in the north, but, or I'm sorry, I should say the next big campaign we have is in the north, but it's not in New England. It's in New York. We're getting ready for the New York campaign. That is going to be definitely a long and expansive campaign, to say the least, with lots of battles. We're finally getting into some good hard conflicts. But I'm not going to leave you guys, you know, waiting too long to get some fighting going on. Next week, we're going south. As you remember, we talked about Charles Lee heading south. When we talked about the Canada campaign, well, we're going to talk about what happens in the South in these early part of 1776. So for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be in the South. After that, we're going to be talking about some political stuff. I have a Navy episode planned, and by the time we end that, we will be full on into the campaign into New York. So that is just a little highlight of the weeks to come. The Facebook is fully up and running. I know I've said that, I say that 1,001 times, but I have finally found the time to jump on. I start posting more about episodes that I'm putting out, and if not today, tomorrow morning, I will post that this episode is ready to go. I've also done something a little bit different. I will put back into these episodes, any books that I'm using for my topics. But I'm going farther and creating a photo album in the Facebook so that you can see the book and you have a log of any of the books that I talk about. So I have basically a full list of the books that I use, because I'm going to just keep posting them to the Facebook to represent episodes that I do. So that is it for a little bit of the maintenance and mop-up that I have to do. I hope everyone has a great week. We are hopefully going to get snowed in tomorrow, because, heck, teacher want a day off. Kids are acting all kinds of crazy. So I'm crossing my fingers for that. If you're in the snowbound areas, cross your fingers for a snow day. Everyone loves a snow day. Till next week, have a great week and keep your powder dry.